Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the conference over to Jazan Chaguni. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Jessica, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Application Server Installation and Update Are Easy. At least it should be. If you have not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. The e-meeting URL is available on the WebSphere Technical Exchange site. Today's webcast will include a PowerPoint presentation. Once you're in the meeting, you'll see the presentation. We recommend that you view the presentation in full screen mode. To do this, go to the view in the toolbar at the top of your screen and select Make Shared Area Full Screen. If you're unable to access the e-meeting at this time, or if you'd like to download a copy of the presentation, please go to the WebSphere Technical Exchange site and click on today's presentation title. The document that displays will contain the PDF file. You may also access the presentation by going to any IBM.com site and typing the tech doc number 7009694 in the search box found at the very top right of the page. Once again, the number is 7009694. This call is being recorded, so you can play it at your convenience. Early next week, the MP3 file will be along with presentation, will be available on the previous webcast tab of the WebSphere Technical Exchange site. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I'll ask you to respond to a few quick polling questions. At the end of today's session, the lines will open for a quick question-and-answer period. Today's speaker is Bob Gibson. Bob is an advisory software engineer who has over a quarter-century experience in numerous software-related roles at IBM, including architecture, developer, tester, instructor, and technical support. He's currently a team leader for the technical support group responsible for IBM's WebSphere Distributed Application Server. He holds both a Bachelor of Science degree in Engineering Science and a Master of Science degree in Computer Science from the University of Virginia. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Bob.
Thank you, Shazan. I hope everyone's having a good day, and I hope you find this presentation of value to you. Today, we will be talking about the application server installation and updating. The original intent is to make it easy to do, and sometimes we have encountered situations that it has proven to be less than easy or less than intuitive. And the purpose of this presentation is to talk towards some of those things and how people can prepare their environment and their situation and their understanding so as to make the installation or updating as easy as possible. The agenda on page 2 is currently showing, and this highlights the titles of the slides to be displayed, but the titles are just a little indication of the content to be discussed on each page. I am not going to be reading the slides. I think that's a little condescending. You are educated individuals, and you can read them as well as I. What I'm going to do is give background information. One of the things that I hope to do as far as this presentation is concerned is, in addition to the slides that will be available after the presentation and the MP3 file, we will have the speaker notes, which are the kind of details that I will be presenting during the presentation. The first portion of the presentation will be talking about the installation challenges or things that really stand in the way of or make some of the things difficult for the installation of the product, and then the different kinds of installations that can be done, and the different ways in which the application server is in fact bundled or made part of other packages or products that are provided by IBM. During the installation or update, there are times when error or warning messages occur that may not be as easy to understand or may be somewhat confusing, so I want to talk a little bit about those. After the installation of the product, we're going to talk about, hey, how do you check that the installation went well and everything is as it should be? And then after that topic, we'll be talking to the updating of the product. And there are times when it is necessary to know how to remove the application server. So I'll be talking towards that some at the end of the presentation. At the end of the slides. We have some references that hopefully will also be of use to you and are a good starting point for additional information or places to look for specific detail. At the end of the presentation, we will have a question and answer session, and if you have questions during the presentation, please jot them down. I'll be glad to answer them, and if I can't answer them today, I will get an answer for you. The title page of the presentation has my email address, which is B as in Bob, G-I-B-S-O-N, bgibson@us.ibm.com. Shazan, let's go to slide 3. This page is just high-level. Gee, why do we need to really be concerned about that? Isn't installation or updating replacement of the files just intuitively obvious and so easy that we don't even have to think about it? It's just sort of plug in the CD and it does it all by itself. Well, that's in an ideal world, and unfortunately there are a number of challenges that we have to be concerned with. You know, the statement as put there is just the way, hey, it sounds easy. Well, unfortunately it's not. There's all sorts of challenges, and the Webster application server distributed product is provided, as the name implies, on a number of platforms, a number of operating systems. For example, AIX, HPUX, Linux on PowerPC, Intel, and Z-Series hardware, as well as Solaris and Windows environments. Because of the variety of environments onto which the products can be installed, there are a number of ways in which the operating systems require software to be installed, so the installation program itself has to be concerned with these environments and how it needs to record or safely and properly install the executables and configuration files that are required by the product. And that's what the whole instance of this talk is about. How do we do that in a way and make sure we understand things in a way to make those processes as easy as possible? Let's go to slide 4. And this is talking towards the kind of challenges that occur. Because of the various operating systems, we also, as part of this, need to be concerned about what particular kind of application server products are we trying to install. There are different, not just versions, that's a numerical value that indicates a specific collection of functions and processes, and the currently available version or the most recent available version of the operating system towards which I will be speaking is version 6 release 1 or 6.1. But there are also variations. There's a version of, or a flavor, if you will, of the application server that is used within other products or bundled as a small application server that can be used by some products, and that is called an express version. There is also a developer's edition that is frequently collected or made available with a development environment or a single application server so as to be easily used by a developer who is making J2EE applications and testing them and making changes on a very dynamic nature. The most normal, or not normal, but most often used is considered the or base edition of the application server. It's just called the Webster Application Server for distributed or other i5 OS or something. And then we have the Deployment Manager or Network Deployment Edition. Now, the difference between the application server, sometimes called the base application server, and the Deployment Manager or Network Deployment version is that the network deployment is made to manage or administer one or more application servers, generally on multiple machines. So if you have an environment that requires a sufficiently large distribution of machines, maybe geographical distribution, they may be managed by a single point of control, the deployment manager. So these different versions or editions of the application server need to be installed, and there are some similarities between the way in which they're installed and some differences. And certainly there are a wide number of differences between the way things are put on a Windows operating system versus a Linux operating system. For example, on a Windows operating system, information about the application server's installation is maintained or held in the registry. Now, this is not necessary in order to execute the application server on a day-to-day basis, but it makes the updating or modification of the application server that much easier because information is maintained that says where is a particular instance of the application server installed, where are the executable files to be found, and things of that nature. They can, if the information is not available in the registry, they can be provided by the administrator, but it certainly makes it a bit easier if that information is available programmatically. But the Windows registry does not exist on a Linux environment, so how that information is held or maintained or made available needs to be done in a way that's specific and appropriate for the operating system in question. Let's go to the next slide, slide 5, please. And this is talking about when you do or need to do an installation of the application server, there may be a simple interactive way, which is done using a graphical user interface, also a GUI, and on each page or panel, you are provided an opportunity to make selections or provide input. For example, the name of the host that should be associated with the application server, port numbers that should be used by the application server, user ID and passwords for security, things like that. But these panels are presented one at a time and require manual intervention. If you're going to be doing a single application installation, that's very well and good. But if you're trying to do the installation of, say, for example, 20 or 30 application servers, and you want them virtually identical, that would become somewhat tedious and error-prone because, I don't know about you, but if I have to type the same thing over and over again on 10 or 20 different machines, I'm likely to make some mistakes. So in order to facilitate that, there is something called a silent install, and the way that works is there is a response file, which fortunately is very heavily commented, telling which of the parameters are specified and how to specify them. And this response file can be provided to the installation program, and it plays the role of providing all of the information that is normally queried from the user by the graphical user interface. So the good thing about this is you can use that response file to programmatically install the application server one or 100 different times with very slight variations that are specific to the operating system or the machine host name that make this unique for that particular environment. There, another use of the install response file, I have had customers who said they want to be able to install multiple times on the same machine because they're, for their testing purposes, will wipe out the installation, remove the installation completely, and then reinstall it from scratch just to make sure that this installation, all the parameters, all the settings are identical to the preceding. So they'll use it as a backup or disaster recovery mechanism of one sort. Let's go to slide 6, please. Now, the bundled application, this is a terminology that has been around in the industry for quite some time. When there are products, specifically IBM products, that want to make use of the application server, depend on the existence of the application server, they will provide an installable image of the application server as part of their product install. So that when their product is installed, for example, WebSphere Portal Server or something like WebSphere Business Integration for Server Foundation or Process Server, all of these products make use of or heavy use of the application server, but they depend on and they require a working version of the application server. And so what they need to do is, as part of their installation, they include the opportunity to install an application server under the covers, if you will. Now, they may be able to make use of an existing application server should you have one in your environment that you want to reuse for this particular product. For example, the WebSphere Portal Server includes an installation option that says, okay, let's install onto an existing application server. But it also includes this bundled version of the application server. So this is one of the things that makes things a little complicated as far as insulation are concerned. One of the concerns of by the products that bundle the WebSphere application server is, gee, we don't want to take a whole bunch of time to install the application server before we install our product. That could be a bit of a distraction, especially if we were to say something like, okay, start the install and come back in 3 hours. You know, that's a bit ridiculous in terms of time consideration. So they have some options that they may have an image of or a collapsed archived install image that they can lay down the executable. But if that's the case, that has some implications as far as the WebSphere application server product is concerned, because the way their archive image was collected may make it difficult for the standalone application server product to be updated, for example. So these are lots of things that we need to be concerned about. So let's go to slide number 7, please. Now, during the installation, one of the most common questions that comes up is, early on, if you're going through the graphical user interface, it does something called a pre-rec check. And that's saying, gee, does this environment onto which the application server is attempting to be installed, does it satisfy the requirements of the product? And sometimes an error or a warning message comes up that says, wait a minute, I don't recognize this operating system as supported. And that causes some confusion because at the time the application server was being developed and when it was going through its system test, the version of the operating system that you may be using today may not have been available for our testing. And so that warning message may cause some confusion because it is a supported operating system for the application server, and we don't go back and modify the application server installation images because that would be cost prohibitive, to say the least. So what we do is we have a website available that includes information about the supported operating systems and releases and variations of things that apply to this prerequisite checking that occurs. And it's important that when you do get a warning or certainly an error, that you look into it and look in detail to find out, does this have specific implications as far as the installation is concerned? The warnings are generally an indication that, wait a minute, something may be wrong, but it may not be of significance. An error is much more serious and certainly should not be ignored. One of the things that occasionally comes up is sometimes, certainly with earlier versions of the application server, we had instances where the code that was used to install the application server was not able to, given the way it was written, to handle well huge, and I mean hundreds of gigabyte file system. And so when it went to see how much space was available, it wasn't expecting a number so large as to not fit in the space that it had allocated. So it came back and says, I'm confused. I don't have enough space. And so we also have some options to say, I know I have enough space. Here's a way to tell the installation program to ignore that particular check because we know that it would be a false warning or false error message. So there are settings that exist, and some of the resources I'll point you to have available the kind of settings that can be used to override some of these prerequisite checkings, for example, to help ensure a smooth and less worrisome installation of the product. Let's go to slide 8, please. Now, at the end of the installation, one of the things that can happen, and it is encouraged, certainly on the first time you install the product, it has an opportunity to run a default application that gets installed called the Installation Verification Application. This is available off of the First Steps page, and what it does is it makes sure that it can start the application server and deploy an application and then start the application and do some simple J2EE operations to have a high degree of confidence that the significant components of the application server do exist and are functioning normally. This is greatly facilitates a high degree of confidence that the install was in fact successful. One of the other things that we have is script that evolves and is available with the product to check that the files that were placed down during the installation are what they should be. During copying operation that occurs, a checksum is created for each of the files that are placed onto the system, and this checksum of each of the files is collected and maintained in a manifest. And this install ver script is used or usable to check to see if the files as they currently exist match the files and checksum as it was created during the installation phase. And this has proved useful on a number of instances. We had some situations where because of trying to use network file systems, for example, an error would be introduced that would modify a file, and that would be exceedingly difficult to detect or indicate without this kind of verification facility. During the installation process, there is a log file that is created that is a great detail about the installation of each and every component and the files that are laid down. And this file, log.txt, is at the end or near the very end of the installation process, copied to the logs directory underneath the application server installation directory, which is user specified. So normally the default value for the application server is something like /web/app/server. And so that's the installation root, and sometimes there are some script files that are referenced that installation root as was home, and that sometimes crops up during some of the documentation that says installation root or was home environment variable. And it's good to know about that, and that is used fairly consistently so that when you decide to install the application server in some non-default location, that the code is able to reference and independently execute without having to worry about where you happen to choose as the installation location. But underneath the application server logs directory, the log.txt file is presented, and that's a good thing to save around. One of the things I frequently encourage people to do is copy the log files that are generated during the installation and store them away in a backup or storage directory, referenced or named associated with the installation phase, so that we can go back later if we need to and dig in and analyze it in great detail to see if any warnings popped up that we may have missed, or hopefully no errors occurred that we did not note during the installation process. But occasionally that has proven very valuable. Okay, let's go to slide 9, please. Once you've had the product in place, one of the things that is noticed off the application server support site is the fact that we regularly update the product. As we have customers use the product, occasionally we find problems with the code. There are a large number of errors that have been found and fixed in the application server. So over time, these collections of fixes are packaged up and made available, and we update the website to indicate the delivery and availability of the updates. So as I was speaking earlier, the versioning number associated with the application server has a version number, the digit currently 6, and then a release number, so 6.1, and then we have a couple other digits that are used to indicate refresh or fix pack, and then something called cumulative fix. This is an indication that we bundle or collect these fixes as they are made available, and they go through a system test verification days to make sure that all of them install and work well together. In addition to fixing the problems for which they were originally developed, they do not break anything else, as far as we can tell. So we have a large collection of regression buckets for our test teams to use and make sure that we have not, in fact, introduced an error, as far as we can tell. So these cumulative fixes and fix packs and reef crash packs, as they're sometimes called, are made available off of websites and the Webster Application Server support site, which we'll see a URL in a little bit, has recommended updates for the product. And so by using the recommended fixes link off the support page, we can find what cumulative fixes exist for the version of the product that's being used. Now, when we retrieve these fixes, we then have to get them installed or update the product with these fixes. And on versions of the application server earlier than 6.1, we have a program called the Update Installer that was used to place these fixes on each of the significant components, for example, the application server and the HTTP server, the IHS, IBM HTTP server that's provided, as well as the plugin, which is a piece of code that works with or in conjunction with the HTTP server and establishes connections to the application server so that when a request comes to your web server, it is routed appropriately to the application server that contains the resource in question. So we have these different pieces, and we have this update installation program, and we've learned over time that trying to have a program to update some other programs, that update program can have problems too. So, you know, we have the never-ending cycle of finding and fixing problems as they occur that are general in nature or specific to an individual customer. So this update program on versions earlier than 6.1 of the product, we would have potentially multiple versions of the product. Well, as far as the current version of the application server product is concerned, we have this update installation program that is, in fact, installed itself. And only one instance needs to be present on the system to install onto any of the application server specific pieces. For example, the application server, the deployment manager, the plugin, or the IBM HTTP server. And this update program has as input, it has to know where the component to be updated exists and the collection of fixes that need to be applied. So during the updating process, it needs to have access to that information. So if it is able to locate the product itself, that makes the job of updating easier. And if not, it needs to be told where the specific product components that exist on the system reside, as well as where the fix for that component resides. And it can then look into the fix and find out what pieces of code need to be replaced and how best to do it and how to do it in a way that they can be removed should they introduce a problem into your environment. And so that's just an introduction, if you will, to some of the things that cause consternation and difficulties and just some of the challenge with associated with the update of the application server. And one of the things on which we spend some of our time. One of the reasons for this presentation is to get a little bit better understanding of those things and how they fit together so as to answer some questions and increase the level of confidence that you have in getting the product installed and getting the product updated. Now, let's go to slide 10, please. This is a continuation of the updating of the product, and it's concerned with, you know, specifically how do I update or install a particular fix. The program that's used to update the application server pieces can also be done using a graphical user interface or using an input or a response file that says that answers all the questions that are normally for which you would be prompted using the GUI. The fix itself, when it's packaged or made available on the website, has with it a README or text file that talks about the collection of fixes that are available and how to use the update program to install the fixes onto the appropriate component. So, as indicated here, after we install the update program, we then make available somewhere on the system this update and point the update program to the fix and then the component onto which it would be installed. Unfortunately, because it's going to be replacing files, the application server component needs to be stopped. We can't, on almost all of the operating systems, replace a file that is in use. So if your application server is running, we would need to stop it. Unfortunately, that's not always sufficient because sometimes there are additional pieces of code out there running on the system that may in fact have some of the files underneath the application server marked as in use, so that during the update, if a change was trying to be done, an error would occur. So we have to be careful and look for any processes that may be using any of the resources. Sometimes the fixes to be installed need to replace the Java runtime environment or the Java virtual machine. So since the update program itself needs to be running, it has its own copy of the Java runtime environment, and then it uses that copy and verifies that all the processes associated with the web-tiered Java runtime are in fact stopped, and then goes through the steps associated with replacing the modified file. Then, at the end or during the updates process, it's making a note of all the changes as they occurred and any problems that may have been encountered, and writes these out to log files so that should something fail to complete or be unable to complete successfully, we're able to look at those log files and determine the component in question that may have had a problem. I was talking earlier about processes that might be using application server resources. One of the ones that has caused us consternation is something the Rational Agent Controller will surprisingly make use of some application server file. So I had a situation where a customer, even though they had marked the agent controller as don't start this automatically when the operating system starts, somehow it got started even though he rebooted his operating system, and it was using the application server resources and the update failed until we went and identified the process that was still sitting around someplace and using those files. So that's just an example of the kind of things that can cause difficulty and give a real headache as far as the update is concerned. Now, another thing that has changed over the time with the application server product is on previous versions, we would have separate instances of the executable code and configuration files for the different application servers that may exist. The current version, the 6.1, has one instance of the executable code. It has specific advantages and also a couple of disadvantages. If you have multiple instances of the application server on a particular machine and you need to update the application server code, you can't be using any of your application servers during the phase needed to update the file. So that's something that needs to be taken into consideration. If you have an environment where you have multiple application servers and they're all on the same hardware making use of the same executable code, they would all need to be stopped. And we've had some people who wanted to have a very, very high degree of availability of their environment, so they had to separate their application servers across hardware, and in fact they wanted to do it geographically and then appropriately stage the updating of their environment. And that included awareness of the fact that if they're going to be updating the product, it's really important to update the deployment manager, the program, in fact, that manages or administers all of the application servers and resources in the environment, because of the chance that any code update may, in fact, have something that depends on the communication between the deployment manager and the application server. Therefore, we need to have the deployment manager code at the highest available level. before we update any of the application services. That's yet one of the other things that has caused consternation over time. And also being aware of the fact that if we're updating the application servers, how do we deal with the fact that that application server, as far as their system is concerned, is unavailable for resource requests to come in, trying to deal with the balancing or the staging of the updates across an environment so as to minimize the downtime and maximize the availability of their system resources. All these things that need to be taken into account, and it's not something that you would try to do without forethought. You really want to take care, especially if you have the demands or needs for high availability environments. Okay, let's go to slide 11. This is talking about a situation where there are times when we need to remove the product. Sometimes we have the need to, for example, remove the application server product from one machine because we're going to be replacing the hardware or moving to a totally different environment. We do have a strategy, an order in which pieces should be removed. And normally, the perspective to think about this is from the outside in terms of you want to disassociate the web server from the application server, and then you can remove the plugins that are within the web server. You can then stop all instances of the product, be it the deployment manager and the application servers, and then you can use an executable program that is provided with the installation. There's an uninstall directory underneath the install root directory. So under something like Webster App Server, there's an uninst directory, and in there we have a program that does or tries to do a good job of removing the resources. One of the things it doesn't do, it tries to maintain in case you should need them, are log files and some configuration-specific files, should you desire to keep those. So it doesn't completely remove every single file, every single directory, and every single reference. It tries to do an intelligent or somewhat intelligent choice of taking the executable code and other things that would no longer in general be needed so that you could make a determination on whether you want to back up or simply just delete those files should they no longer be needed. And then you can do the final step. Now, one of the things that sometimes happens is problems can occur with the removal of the product as they do with the installation of the product. So we have some very detailed instructions in the application server documentation that talk to how do you verify that all the pieces and all the references, and sometimes we use the term footprint, about the product are in fact cleaned up so that should you need to install a subsequent install or installation of the application server product, it doesn't get confused and think you already have a version of the product installed, because then it would be which is right kind of scenario. So we have very detailed instructions in the online documentation, and that will remove all those references and hopefully give you a high degree of confidence that, in fact, all references or remnants of the product are, in fact, uninstalled. Now, one of the differences between this version and preceding versions of the product is that there has been some request over time that the product be installable as something other than administrator or root authority, because not everyone wants to provide that authority to every user on that system. They may want to allow them to install the application server, but for their own use and not an enterprise-type use, but to, for example, develop applications, but they don't feel the need to require them or allow them to have the wide open administrator authority. So with version 6.1, you can install the product as non-root, and you can update the product as non-root. But that's yet another opportunity for a problem. Say you install the product as root, you would want to also be updating the product as root, because that user ID would own those files and resources. And so if you try to update it with a different user ID, that could cause a mismatch or a disagreement between ownership and roles and responsibilities, and the second user ID may not have the appropriate authority. Or worst case, that you installed it as non-root, now you try to install the update as root, there's also going to be that mismatch of file ownership, and then that might cause problems because the code that when it's trying to execute may be executing as non-root and doesn't have the authority to access some of the files. So that is yet another potential problem. And this removal of the product, you would also want to be removing the product based on the user ID that was used to install the product. So there's lots of little questions that can come in during this process of planning or execution of the installation of the product or updating of the product and even removal of the product. And this is just a little bit of an insight of some of those difficulties that can come to play and things to be thought about during this whole process. Let's go to the next slide, which is slide 12. And this talks to some of the resources that are available. One of the most valuable is the first bullet, which is the application server support site. And I would strongly recommend that this URL be bookmarked. It has a number of resource links off of this page, for example, to the online documentation, to recommended fixes or updates or downloads. The online documentation reference is available off of a library link on the support page, and the strategy planning documents, for example, on the bottom of the application server support page, there's a link associated with the prerequisites or the system requirements to help you understand the kind of hardware and operating system required by the application server for installation. So this is a really, really good source of information, and I use it all the time. I hate to think the number of times throughout the day that I go to this link to find some resource or make use of some of the facilities they're on. Let's go to slide 13, please. And one of the things that is available off of the tech note, some of the tech notes are update strategy, and off the support site, down at the bottom, we do have links for the update strategy, as well as off of the recommended fixes pages, we have links for the version of the update installer that's appropriate for the version of the product you're using, and all of the cumulative fixes and fix packs and refresh packs and all sorts of good downloads that are really appropriate to consider or be made aware of. One of the big pieces of information associated with any of the fixes is a list of the fixes that are incorporated and the kind of problem that each fix was made to resolve. So that is something that is a good reference and something that important to be able to locate and find out if you run into a problem. Very frequently it is the case that you're going to be encouraged to install the latest version of the or release of the product because of the singular distribution of the fixes. It's quite frequently the case where when a problem is called in, a fix already exists and is available. So in order to facilitate the update of your system and the solution of your problem, if you look for the fixes that have been made available, they may in fact already resolve your problem and make it that much easier for you to get your problem resolved and your system running to the level of confidence that you would like to be using. That is the end of the presentation as far as I was planning.
Thank you again for your presentation. At this point, Jessica, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. We will pause for just a moment. And our first question comes from Brian Nitzel with Cooperators.
Hi. I was hoping actually to get a little more detail on some of the pieces here, but one of the questions I had was with doing the updates, what I found is on Windows machines you have to copy the update installer directory to a specific location. And
so you're talking about version 6.0 of the product?
Yeah.
Okay.
So is there a best practice as to what to do with that file once you're done with it? Like, should you keep it for a potential uninstall later?
The update install program, as you indicated, for version 6 of the product, needed to be underneath the components to be modified. So, for example, underneath the application server, what's your application, you'd place the executable or the update install directory, or under the plugins, or under the IBM HTTP server directory. That's where you would have the directory structure associated with the update program. Once you've provided the update itself, you can remove or archive that directory structure. I have made, I've had many people just remove it, and this encourages them to then use the latest version available of the update program to install any fix that should be made, or to use the latest version of the update program to remove any updates that they may have installed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Okay.
One of the differences between 6.0 and 6.1 is instead of requiring you to have the update install program underneath a particular component directory like the application server, they have only one update program, and that can install any application server update on any of the components.
Okay, so that's greatly improved.
Right, right. And on previous versions of the application server, they allowed you to have the update program anywhere. Unfortunately, in order to know where the application server, you really needed to execute a script file associated with the application server so environment variables would be set and available to the update program. So, you know, it has evolved over time, and hopefully to the better.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Once again, that is star one on your touchtone telephone. We will pause for just a moment. And there are no further questions. I'd like to turn the conference back over to our presenters for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, Jessica. I am very interested in any clarifications that you might want, or should you encounter any questions that later and you'd like to get answered, please feel free to contact me. You can send me an email to bgibson@us.ibm.com, and hopefully we can get those answered to your satisfaction in a timely fashion. And if I do not know the answer, I will get it for you. Thank you so very much for your time, and I hope that this presentation has proven valuable to you and worth your time and participation. Thank you again.
This concludes today's presentation. Thank you for your participation, and have a wonderful day.